that it takes just one racist to shoot me dead. A wise man once said, just because we're magic doesn't mean you can't kill us. So you can't kill us and expect us not to feel angry, tired, frustrated, confused, scared. This black woman is angry. Her brothers and sisters are being beaten until their skin is black and blue. This black woman is angry. The question is, why aren't you? Thank you.
Those are the voices of protesters speaking June 2nd and 3rd at Waterfront Park in downtown Portland. The protests are continuing every day in every part of the city of Portland and surrounding areas. There's an online calendar where you can find out about all the various marches and gatherings that are taking place on a daily basis in support of Black Lives. That website is pdx-blm-events.org. That's pdx-blm-events.org. Happy Juneteenth, everyone. The struggle continues.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO programming is made possible by KBOO member listeners and support from People's Food Co-op, a community-owned, values-driven natural foods cooperative open daily from 10 a.m. to 8 p.m. during the pandemic, featuring farm-direct organic produce from more than 30 local farms, bulk foods, and farmers market every Wednesday year-round, located at Southeast Tibbet Street and 21st Avenue in Portland for almost 50 years. Online at peoples.coop.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon Governor Kate Brown wants to make Juneteenth a paid holiday for state employees. The mayor of Phoenix, Oregon, is accused of hitting a protester with his car. And in national news, the city of Louisville has fired an officer involved in the death of Breonna Taylor. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 19th, 2020. I'm Althea Billings. Oregon Governor Kate Brown has introduced legislation to make Juneteenth an annual state holiday, according to multiple news sources. Juneteenth, celebrated today on June 19th, is a commemoration of the abolition of slavery that has been celebrated by Black communities for over 150 years. Currently, 47 states acknowledge Juneteenth in some form, but Texas, Virginia, New York, and Pennsylvania are the only ones to recognize it as an official paid holiday for state employees. Yesterday, Governor Brown declared this Juneteenth a state holiday and also announced a bill that would make the day a permanent state holiday in 2021. Governor Brown's move to make Juneteenth a holiday is part of a broader national movement spurred by ongoing protests against police brutality and as the nation's new efforts to confront deeply embedded systemic racism. Brown joins other elected officials in the state seeking to honor Juneteenth. Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler and Multnomah County Chair Deborah Cafori recently declared Juneteenth a paid holiday for city employees and county employees. Yesterday, Governor Kate Brown announced plans to create a law enforcement task force to improve training and certification. According to a report in the Oregonian, the task force is expected to develop improvements to officer training and certification, incorporate racial equity and de-escalation training and certifications. It will also change state laws for officer decertification and diversify the board on public safety standards and trainings. The task force will be led by Constantine Sevier, Brown's public safety advisor who formerly headed Portland's Police Oversight Office. In 2017, Portland resident Michael Fesser was arrested on false charges of theft by the West Lynn Police. Yesterday, he returned to meet with Acting Police Chief Peter Mahuna and Captain Otis Rollins to talk about the changes that need to be made so that police don't continue to target black men like him unfairly. Fesser was working for A&B Towing in Southeast Portland in 2017 when he raised questions about racial discrimination at the workplace. The company's owner contacted Westland's then-chief, Terry Timmias, to solve the problem. Timmias assigned officers, including Sergeant Tony Reeves, to investigate Fesser for theft. A case was built, and he was arrested by Westland and Portland officers, but the case was later dropped when it was shown that Fesser was innocent and the company was simply afraid of a potential racial discrimination lawsuit. He sued the city of Westland and was later awarded a $600,000 settlement. His visit came 2 days after Acting Chief Mahuna finally fired Sergeant Reeves for, quote, the irreparable loss of public trust and confidence in his ability to be a fair and unbiased police officer. In a statement, Fesser said, quote, I know this community needs healing. We have to be willing to form these relationships to begin to build trust. Acting Chief Mahuna says he wants Michael Fesser to be part of police training to, quote, give officers perspective on what people of color feel like. With more perspective comes understanding. Later on Thursday, Fesser joined Jaden and Amani Grant, the sons of former Trailblazers player Brian Grant, at an anti-racism rally they organized at Willamette Falls Park. The trio then led a group of about 200 marchers through town to the Westland Police Department, where they took a knee in silence for 8 minutes and 46 seconds in memory of George Floyd. The mayor of a small Jackson County, Oregon town is under fire for his behavior during a Black Lives Matter rally earlier this month. For more on the story, here's KBOO's Ray Bodwell.
The mayor of Phoenix, Oregon is under investigation for allegedly striking a protester with his car during a Black Lives Matter protest in neighboring Medford. The protest was peaceful and was being facilitated by the Medford police when the protesters turned into a street that had not been blocked off. In a video of the incident, which took place on June 1st, a car can be clearly seen bumping into a protester with its front fender and mirror. Another protester witnesses the incident and sits in the car, prompting Mayor Chris Luz to stop his car and step out to get in a verbal exchange with the protesters. Earlier this week, Michaela Johnston, the protester who was struck, appeared at a Phoenix City Commission meeting to directly confront the mayor.
I just wanted to point out how disgusted I am by how you can sit back and say, yes, I agree with this, I agree with that. I disagree with the police using excessive force and all of that. And you sit and you say that you respect the movements, the Black Lives Matter movements, the remembrance of George Floyd, yet you can be an aggressor at a peaceful protest, and you can sit there with a sign on your desk that says, be kind, when you voluntarily drove your car, and you're not even going to look at me in the eye. You're shuffling through your papers, which is the most disrespectful part. When that lady was up there talking about racial equality, you couldn't look at her in the eye either. You were shuffling your papers. You're still not looking at me in the eye. And you want to say, do we have the timer on? So, and you're trying to interrupt her at the end of her speaking when she's talking about racial equality? And kind of bringing to attention that it is a white presenting board, but and you want to go and try to look through the crowd and look at the people of color, you don't respect that. You don't respect racial equality if you can sit and then you can interrupt, ask about the time, ask about people only speaking if they live in Phoenix. When you asked for public discussion and you asked for feedback, but now you don't want it because you can't confront and you can't own up to your own actions like you're asking the police to do. You are not owning up to your actions at all. You're running away from them. In fact, when I saw you again at that protest and I tried to confront you about it, you again ran away. And I have that on film too. So you can deny it all you want, but I have everything on film and your actions are being accounted for. And if I, don't interrupt me, please, let me speak. If I don't see anything from this, you can't expect a police report. Thank you.
Johnston said that Luz was unfit to lead the city, with at least one city council member agreeing. Councilor Sarah Westover said, quote, I can't believe the actions that you took, nudging teenagers with your car, intimidating and threatening them for expressing their opinions. I think this is an unacceptable behavior, and I want to call out the mayor to resign tonight. The Medford police have initiated an investigation into the incident. For KBOO, this is Ray Bodwell.
After years of demands from both students and community leaders, the president of Portland State University says he will present a new plan for campus safety in the next few weeks. The longstanding demand to disarm the campus police rose dramatically after the shooting death of Jason Washington at the hands of campus police in 2018. He was shot and killed by officers as he dropped a gun as he was trying to break up a fight. At that time, the university's Board of Trustees voted to keep armed officers, but a rally at PSU last Friday showed that this was still a high priority for the community. During the rally, Jason Washington's daughter Kayla spoke about PSU's response to her father's death, saying, quote, "PSU doesn't want you to know my father, a black man, a veteran, a peacemaker, was killed because PSU made horrific decisions to legally arm their security against the wishes of students, faculty, and staff." PSU President Stephen Percy was not specific about the planned campus security changes, but he said it wouldn't end there. In a statement, Percy said, quote, "While campus safety is a critical focus, the main thing on many minds is the starting point to end racism. We need to acknowledge and call out racism, implicit bias, and practices that for centuries have promoted and sustained advantage for some at the expense of others." He said the university will create a $1 million racial equity fund to advance the recruitment, retention, and success of students and employees of color. Last night, protesters tore down a statue of George Washington on the lawn of the German-American Society on Sandy Boulevard. The action came during Portland's 22nd consecutive day of protest against police brutality and racism. According to reports, protesters gathered around the statue at about 10 p.m. and wrapped an American flag around its head, which was then set on fire. The crowd increased in size until there were enough protesters to pull the statue down. Protesters said they removed the statue because George Washington was a known slave owner. This is just one of many statues that have been pulled down across the country in recent weeks. Protesters see statues as ongoing examples of systemic racism associated with racist historical figures. Earlier this week, protesters pulled down the 13-foot-tall statue of the Pioneer at the University of Oregon. Nearly 8,000 Oregonians made first-time filings for unemployment benefits last week. They joined with about 1.5 million Americans who made claims last week. Although the number is slightly below the previous week's 8,500, it continues a record rate of job loss that began with the COVID-19 lockdowns in mid-March. The Oregon Department of Employment estimates that the state unemployment rate is currently sitting at 14.2%. The department said there are now 700 employees processing unemployment claims in an effort to reduce the lengthy wait that many Oregonians have been subjected to before receiving benefits. In late May, the department director was fired by Governor Brown. At that point, many applicants that had initially filed in mid-March had still not received their benefit payments. Micro-credentials are a trending alternative to a four-year bachelor's degree and can come at a lower cost. For more, here's Eric Tegedoff of the Oregon News Service.
There isn't much folks can do with degrees they don't finish, but another path to higher education is gaining steam as people out of work from the pandemic look to advance their careers. Micro-credentials, or stackable credentials, allow folks to break up their educational goals and move them closer. They gain skills in the form of certificates to put on their resume and can even add them up to a bachelor's degree. John Marcus wrote about this for the Hechinger Report.
They can't wait 6 years. They need to get a workplace-ready credential really fast. And so micro-credentials are getting a huge bump in momentum from people who need education, and they need education really quickly.
Marcus says another advantage to micro-credentials is that they come at a quarter of the cost. But he adds that employers' reactions to certifications, often achieved online, have been mixed. This isn't a new concept. Patrick Crane is Director of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission. He says community colleges in the state have embedded certificates in associate degree programs since 2007. But he says it's still hard to get the traditional notion of college out of people's heads.
Getting the idea that people have of college to line up with current reality so that they do feel like college is for them, that there are opportunities beyond a traditional four-year degree, is something that we spend a lot of time thinking about and talking about.
Karen Hummelbaugh is director of the Office of Workforce Investments, also in the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission. She says stackable credentials are important for healthcare workers looking to advance their careers. It's also a manageable way for people to work towards other careers.
To be able to, over time, work themselves into another career versus feeling like they have a mountain they have to climb with a 2-year degree or something like that. They can actually take these smaller steps that seem less insurmountable.
Support for this reporting was provided by Lumina Foundation. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for a special episode of Free Culture Radio. At 6, it's a Juneteenth special edition of Grassroots News. Tune in the rest of the evening and tomorrow from 2 to 5 p.m. to hear special Juneteenth programming. Tonight's weather will be partly cloudy with a low of 62 degrees. Tomorrow's weather will be cloudy as well with a high of 72. Today in history, in 1865, Union soldiers reached Galveston, Texas with the news that the Civil War had ended and that all enslaved peoples were free. This was nearly 2.5 years after the Emancipation Proclamation was made official by President Abraham Lincoln. Historians say the news was likely suppressed in order to reap one last cotton harvest off of slave labor. This date is celebrated with the holiday Juneteenth, marking the true emancipation of slaves in the United States. The quote of the day is from civil rights leader Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s 1963 letter from Birmingham Jail. He wrote, quote, "If the cruelties of slavery could not stop us, the opposition we now face will surely fail, because the goal of America is freedom. Abused and scorned though we may be, our destiny is tied up with America's destiny." Yesterday evening, L.A. County Sheriff deputies shot and killed an 18-year-old security guard named Andres Guardado Pineda in Gardena, California. According to a police spokesperson, the deputies observed Pineda, who pulled a handgun and began running away. The statement goes on to say that, quote, "at some point, deputies contacted the suspect, and that's when the deputy-involved shooting occurred," end quote. But according to the young man's employer, deputies first pulled their guns on Pineda, which scared him, causing him to run from the officers. Andrew Haney, the owner of the auto body shop where Pineda was employed, said he could not understand why the young man was shot. Haney told reporters that, quote, "he ran because he was scared and they shot and killed him. He has a clean background and everything. There's no reason for the shooting." The shooting triggered immediate backlash in the community. A protest against, quote, "LA County Sheriff's terrorism in black and brown communities," end quote, was planned for Friday afternoon at the scene of Pineda's death. This was the second shooting by sheriff's deputies in just 2 days. On Wednesday, deputies shot and killed Teron Jamal Boone after a shootout in Rosamond, California. Detectives say they were tracking a man wanted for kidnapping and assault with a deadly weapon when they pulled over Boone's car. They say he opened the door and began firing. Deputies returned fire, killing Boone and wounding the woman driver of the car. Boone is the half-brother of Robert Fuller, who was found hanged from a tree in Palmdale, California on June 10th. Fuller's death was originally ruled a suicide, which city officials tried to blame on COVID-19 and mental health issues, but after pushback from his family and community members, the city promised a full investigation. The investigation is presumably still underway. Citing a, quote, "extreme indifference to human life," the Louisville Police Department has fired one of the officers involved in the shooting death of Breonna Taylor on March 13th. Taylor was killed in her bed at home when officers entered her apartment at 1 a.m. under a no-knock warrant. Believing that they were intruders, Taylor's boyfriend, Kenneth Walker, fired at the officers, hitting one in the leg. Officers shot back, hitting Taylor 8 times, killing her. Walker's gun was fully licensed. The firing of Officer Brett Hankison was announced by Louisville Mayor Greg Fisher. Fisher said that under Kentucky law, he could not give a public reason for the firing and did not mention the fate of the other officers involved in the shooting. But in a pre-termination letter that was made public earlier today, Police Chief Rob Schroeder said that Hankison, quote, "wantonly and blindly fired 10 rounds into Taylor's apartment." Today is Juneteenth, the 155th anniversary of when enslaved African Americans in Galveston, Texas, found out they were free. With that story and more, it's Lily Bulkey with 2020 Talks.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
For the many people who had never heard of Juneteenth, now they do know about the word Juneteenth. Maybe they will do some research, find out what it means and how it came about on June 19th of 1865, and that going forward, there'll be other opportunities for them to get more information about the actual experiences and the real lives of Black people who were enslaved in this country.
So Lillian Green, poet, historian, lawyer, and author, is glad President Donald Trump's first big public rally was moved from today, the 155th anniversary of Union soldiers informing enslaved African Americans in Galveston, Texas, that they were free, 2.5 years after President Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation. Green says the decision shows Trump advisors have some recognition of today's importance to the Black community and the current political climate. After moving his rally to tomorrow, Trump claimed that he's responsible for making Juneteenth famous, though Black Americans have long been celebrating the historic day. Pastor Robert Turner of Vernon AME Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma, the city where the rally is scheduled, says President Trump knew what he was doing when he first chose the date and the location.
Instead of talking about how awesome of a celebration Juneteenth is, or how much more that needs to be done to address issues that are relevant to the African-American community, we're talking about Trump's presidential visit.
Turner's church is the only standing Black-owned structure in the Greenwood District from before 1921, when white city residents burned down Black Wall Street, a thriving Black business community and residential area.
There's still devastation here. There's emotional trauma here. There's still been no justice given, no reparations.
A Tulsa judge ruled against local efforts to stop the indoor rally, despite a recent spike in new coronavirus cases. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court blocked the Trump administration's attempt to repeal DACA, deferred action for childhood arrivals. Trump attacked the decision. Former Vice President Joe Biden revered it, saying if elected, he'll send a bill to Congress to protect Dreamers on day one. Andrea Flores is the ACLU's Deputy Director of Immigration Policy.
An incredible moment for the undocumented community and for DACA recipients who now can continue to work and live without the daily fear of deportation. But today we celebrate and tomorrow we get back to work, because what we need are permanent protections for Dreamers, for DACA recipients, and for the 11 million undocumented.
Flores credits the undocumented youth who fought hard for this decision.
I think this is a really important day for racial justice, and I hope further adds to the momentum that combating white supremacy is something that connects our immigration policies and our policing policies, and they're all part of the same system that makes America imperfect for brown and Black communities.
Facebook yesterday removed 88 ads by the Trump re-election campaign that included a symbol the Nazis forced their political opponents to wear on their clothes in prison and concentration camps. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Lily Bolke. Thanks for listening at pacificanetwork.org and publicnewsservice.org.
The Pine Ridge Indian Health Service Hospital in South Dakota can now bill Medicare for services. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Pine Ridge Indian Health Service Hospital in South Dakota has regained accreditation and can now bill Medicare for services. Jackie Hendry has more.
The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services ended its provider agreement with the Pine Ridge IHS facility in 2017, citing the facility's failure to meet care standards. Losing that agreement meant the facility couldn't reimburse treatments through those programs. By November of last year, a CMS survey team reported the hospital to be 100% compliant with standards. Last month, the Joint Commission awarded the hospital full accreditation after a virtual survey. James Drivinghawk is the Great Plains Area Director for Indian Health Services. He says the Pine Ridge team has demonstrated it can consistently meet standards.
We have expanded leadership oversight from the area office to the hospital and improved staffing levels. And we have increased requirements for medical staff credentialing, education of our staff for quality standards, and implemented new checks and balances to ensure new issues that arise are addressed promptly.
He says the agreement with CMS will help the facility maintain and expand its services.
Going forward now, that all of our visits that we have with our patients are able to be reimbursed, fully reimbursed now. And so the hospitals will receive that additional revenue, and then we take that revenue and invest it back into the facility and to services.
Driving Hawk says one of those investments is a planned renovation of the Pine Ridge IHS Emergency Department. I'm Jackie Hendry in Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Native people, their allies, and city officials took part in a celebration in Santa Fe, New Mexico, Thursday after a statue of Spanish Governor Don Diego de Vargas was taken down. They also called for the removal of a war monument bearing a racist inscription. The celebration followed demonstrations earlier this week in Albuquerque and Rio Arriba County, where statues of Spanish colonizer Juan de Oñate were removed. Autumn Rose Billy, a co-founder of Three Sisters Collective, spoke to the crowd about the atrocities Oñate committed against Acoma people in the late 1500s.
Hundreds of Acoma people passed away during that massacre, and the men who survived were enslaved and had their right foot amputated. And that's why you saw the statue in the late 1990s of Don Juan Oñate with his right foot cut off, because we still remember.
Native people say the removal of statues of colonizers in New Mexico is a long time coming, including tribal leaders who've worked with politicians on removing the stone pillar honoring military actions. George Rivera is former governor of Poaque Pueblo and has been involved in talks about its removal.
In that monument carved in marble, we're referred to as savages. And savage has a lot of meaning, both legally and culturally. Has a lot of meaning, and it was not appropriate for it to be used in describing our people. I think our people are the Pueblo people, Apache people, Navajo people create the image of the Southwest, and everybody knows that, you know, the tribes are still alive and vibrant in this area.
The mayor of Santa Fe, Alan Weber, spoke at Thursday's event, calling the removal of statues part of healing and justice. He did not mention if or when the monument would be taken down or a statue of soldier Kit Carson. The Gila River Indian community has closed its casinos for 2 weeks due to recent spikes of COVID-19 in Arizona. The tribe halted gaming operations in March due to COVID-19 and reopened in May after the state lifted stay-at-home orders. The second closure comes after a casino employee reportedly died recently due to complications of COVID-19. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Acting quickly to cut carbon pollution could reduce the heat increase in national parks by up to 2/3. For more on that story, here's Dr. Anthony Lizowitz with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. At the Indiana Dunes National Park, visitors hope to glimpse the Karner blue butterfly. At Yosemite, they look for the American pika. But these and other species are at risk as climate change hits national parks.
Human-caused climate change exposes the U.S. national parks more severely to heat and aridity than the country as a whole.
That's Patrick Gonzalez of the University of California, Berkeley. He says since 1895, temperature in the parks has increased at double the national rate.
The hotter and drier conditions in national parks occur because vast areas of the parks are located in extreme environments. The Arctic, high mountains, and the arid Southwest.
The rapid warming can destroy important habitat for plants and animals. But reducing carbon pollution can help. Gonzalez's research shows that swift action could reduce the expected heat increase in national parks by up to 2/3.
The U.S. national parks protect some of the most irreplaceable natural areas and cultural sites in the world. Cutting carbon pollution would reduce human-caused climate change and help save our national parks for future generations.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, June 19th, 2020. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast is Piper McDaniel, Ray Bodwell, Jenka Soderberg, and Althea Billings. The producer is Ray Bodwell, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Antonia Gonzalez, Lily Bolke, Eric Tegedoff, and Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our listeners. If you'd like to support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm or you can use our mobile app and click on Donate. Coming up next is Free Culture Radio.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Development and Events Committee meets on the fourth Monday of the month at 4:30 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
Timothy Leary lives. No, he's outside looking in. Timothy Leary lives. No, he's outside.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Free Culture Radio. I'm Doug McVeigh. June 19th is Juneteenth. 45 states and the District of